Coast Podcast on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
You're listening to The Morning Roast on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and by asking your smart speaker to play ESPN Radio. My name is Clinton Yates. I'm looking at a screen that does not show Dominique Foxworth. Mina Kimes is here as well, and she's in L.A. Mina, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm looking at a screen that shows you wearing a tank top that I believe says Black Thighs Matter. You're not wearing shorts,
no.
So you're kind of undermining your own message, if we're being honest.
Hey, first of all, listen, if we were on the television show, that'd be a different matter. And also, y'all want to check my OnlyFans to see the real result of that.
Trying not to get fired today. Hey, Dominique.
You know what I'm saying? That was Dominique Foxworth, very professionally moving right back into his seat, making a lot of noise on his microphone. We love you, Fox. It's time for your Sports Center update, courtesy 24, Dominique Foxworth.
All right, here we go. Iowa plays longtime strength coach Chris Doyle on leave for racial insensitivity. The decision came after several former Hawkeyes spoke out about negative experiences they and other black players had while under Doyle's supervision. Iowa coach Kirk Ferentz posted a video to social media explaining the decision, saying it was a defining moment for the program. The NBA is working on roster protocol for injuries and illness at Disney. ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski and Bobby Marks report that in the event of positive coronavirus tests or serious injuries, the NBA is working on mechanisms that will be used to replace participants in the league's restart at Disney, including how teams will be able to utilize two-way contracts. That's it. SportsCenter, you're welcome.
All right, SportsCenter. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. We're close, convenient, and known for our guaranteed everyday low prices and excellent customer service from professional parts people you can trust. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Fox got me all jammed up on that Reed situation. I feel like an idiot now, but that's okay.
Don't blame your teammates. Don't blame your teammates.
I didn't blame the teammates. I said
you just
what happened
said,
and then what I did.
You just said. Got jammed
okay?
up.
It's like
blame
a baton
your
pass. Once
don't
I got it.
Teammates.
It's like when you're running track.
Don't
like
blame
we were
teammates.
Talking
to this Joel. Is what you say. You say, hey, we win as a team. We lose as a team. We didn't come through
okay.
at this moment.
I won't blame my teammates
I
for not being
done
there at kickoff.
In that moment.
Okay.
My bad.
Serious.
I was making a sign. We got a neighborhood protest later. Can I go make signs with my kids?
Speaking of teams. How about the NFL, guys? How about the NFL?
Get out of here with your transitions, Kimes.
A classic.
So the NFL gave us another lovely basement moment in American media where old Raj, decided to get up and he wanted to say this to the people.
It has been a difficult time for our country, in particular, black people in our country. First, my condolences to the families of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and all the families who have endured police brutality. We, the National Football League, condemn racism and the systematic oppression of black people. We, the National Football League, admit we were wrong for not listening to NFL players earlier and encourage all to speak out and peacefully protest. We, the National Football League, believe black lives matter. I personally protest with you and want to be part of the much-needed change in this country. Without black players, there would be no National Football League. And the protests around the country are emblematic of the centuries of silence, inequality, and oppression of black players, coaches, fans, and staff. We are listening. I am listening. And I will be reaching out to players who have raised their voices and others on how we can improve and go forward for a better and more united NFL family.
Letter grades on the statement, because we are in statement America these days. Mina Kimes, you go first.
Incomplete, because which players, Raj?
Who?
Which
huh?
players? You know,
what?
And by the way, it's not just about Colin Kaepernick. You know, I think on Monday, it was Monday, on ESPN Daily, my daily podcast. Check it out, available wherever you get your podcast. We had Brandon Marshall on, Broncos linebacker, friend of Colin Kaepernick, teammate from college, who kneeled in 2016 and was treated so horribly, received, you know, hate mail, was dropped by two of his sponsors, one of whom he named CenturyLink. You know them from the stadium. And I can't help, every time I see a statement like this, every time I'm hearing players come forward and saying, actually, Kaepernick was right, and these are causes that we should care about, and the protests were misinterpreted all along. Every time I hear that, I just think of those players in 2016 who were at the forefront of all of this, and what it must feel like for them watching the world 4 years later. And I know this is often the case, right, with you know, civil rights or just movements in general. The people who sort of carry the torch at the beginning are, I don't want to say forgotten, but they're never made whole for the sacrifices that they made or what they endured. But I do believe those players, again, it's not just Colin Kaepernick, do deserve to be praised, do deserve to be apologized to, and that's something we're still not hearing.
Again, maybe it's because I am full of righteous indignation all week on television. I just want to laugh. Like, Roger, you go protest? Yeah. What protest? When have you ever protest, Rog? When are you going to protest? When are you going to do it? Let me know, because I will be there. I can't wait. So does that mean he's going to kneel? He's going with the fist up? And who are you going to protest? You going to protest against the league that blackballed Colin Kaepernick, or the owners who wouldn't sign Colin Kaepernick? Oh, your employers. Like, yeah. That to me is kind of out there. And I guess him putting out the statement is somewhat of a protest, because I know I read that most of the owners didn't know about it, and that's something that you would normally need to check with your boss about. So maybe that's what he means by protest.
You're listening to The Morning Roast on ESPN Radio. Clinton Yates, Mina Kimes, Dominique Foxworth. Here's the thing about the statement, though. And this is something that on a larger level, I need y'all to listen to and understand. Not you all here, but the listening audience. Dear folks of privilege, apologies do not equate to atonement. So while you say, okay, we're sorry, that does not erase or undo the years and all the time and all the systems that created the problem. So the simple acknowledgement is not even really step one. It's like step zero. You know what I'm saying? In terms of what's got to actually happen to make some changes within, whether it be the chains of command that work in NFL locker rooms and front offices, you know, that are going to get more people in the coaching pipeline on the offensive side and thus get more people into the front offices and thus change the way that we look at just in general what the decision making is, you know, and it's going to change in terms of what you allow players to do. It's got to change in terms of what you allow players to do on the field as well. I feel like we've massively overlooked that. This could have all been avoided if you just let people protest. Now, if you come out and say, I'm sorry, my bad, but then you try to control the protest again, well, then you've defeated the purpose. Because the entire situation here is that the NFL doesn't have to control everything. Some of their players should be allowed to do what they want without having to be the finger under the, you know, have be under the thumb of some owner who decides that he doesn't like one guy one week.
I'm glad we keep mentioning the owners, though, because I think they're that relationship between Goodell and the owners is at the crux of all of this. And the fact that he came out with that statement, Dominique, it is, you know, a tiny protest in and of itself, or at least a symbol of sort of a change in that dynamic, because something we've known, people who cover the NFL for the last few years, Roger Goodell hasn't been, I don't want to say hasn't been the problem, but he has not been the immovable rock on all of this. The workout, right. You know, not wanting to change the rules, that's honestly making movement on the Rooney Rule, wanting to increase the pipeline. Roger Goodell has not been the person stopping all of that. It's been his owners, but as you mentioned, the owners are his bosses, right? And his role has primarily been to be the human shield for them. Dominique, it's an unusual dynamic, so I can't help but wonder, okay, if Roger Goodell comes out and he says all of the right things and he wants to do these things, is that enough?
It's something, but he doesn't have to be. Like, if you are a meat shield, you choose to be that meat shield. He can get out the way, and, like, they can't take back all the money they've given him. And, like, if he wants to, I don't know how he's going to, when he finally steps down from this job, how he's going to feel about the job that he's done if these racial issues are not cleared up. Go ahead, Mina.
No, I just can't help but also think, as you're saying that, and he's the meat shield, who's let him be the meat shield? We have.
Right.
The media.
Yeah.
Like, we got to stop calling out Roger Goodell and letting him be the stand-in on all of these issues, the Rooney Rule, Colin Kaepernick, the protests, everything as it pertains to race. Yeah, I mean, let's name some owners, right? Because that is fundamentally what's at the heart of this.
That's what I'm saying. Roger Goodell saying something to me is not the same thing as owners actually making a statement. Roger Goodell at this point almost represents the office of Roger Goodell when it comes to PR for me. Because he's got too many other people with too many local markets and other interests for him to think that that's just going to soothe everybody, especially in June when the season is not even close to starting. Somebody's going to pop off. These dudes are too old and too rich and too white to not come out and say something that's going to offend people and is going to actually be harmful. On top of that, whether it's going to be some policy for, I don't know, what workers can wear in their stadiums who aren't football players, whether it's going to be some other nonsense about what people can do in the crowd, you know that this is going to come up again. And when that happens, it ain't going to be Raj sitting in a basement in a quarter zip who's going to change anything. It's going to be the people that actually sign the paychecks in the NFL. So while I admire him for doing this, I'm not holding my breath on anything actually changing as far as what the NFL game day experience is for these owners, Mina.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's important we don't talk about the owners as a monolith as well.
Right.
I think a lot of them were ideologically opposed to the protests, but also a lot of them were economically afraid. And that, I think, is what's shifted here, right? Because money talks, and the money has moved in the opposite direction on this. That's why all these corporations are issuing these statements. Right. It's not out of the goodness of their hearts. Some cases it is, I'm sure, and some of these employees who are writing them really mean it. But the money has moved, and I think that's going to affect the way certain owners talk about this and their actions.
Speaking of which, my bad. Go ahead, Fox.
No, you're good. You're good. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, speaking of which, if you want to see a real statement on what to do, and this is another self-indulgent personal plug because my man Chris Williams wrote it for this place in D.C. at Public Bar Live. You want to see a statement? Read that, because that will actually tell you what you should say. It ain't just about I'm sorry. It's about what is actually wrong and what you're actually going to do. Fuck.
Yeah, I mean, I think that all this that we're talking about is hugely important, and I hope that we use this opportunity to continue to push and expect things from the very highest level. But Mina's right. We should... We don't have to. I made the comment that Roger has to stand there to be the meat shield. He can move out the way, but we have to keep shooting at him to allow him to be the meat shield. Like, we can make the choice to go around him and go at the people who are the problem, which brings to mind, I guess, Hugh Jackson said that he wanted to sign Colin Kaepernick, and then there's some reporting that suggests that may not be true, but I don't know. I'm not going to call Hugh Jackson a liar. I'm just going to say, where was you at when we needed you? Like, this is useless now. It feels the same as, like, Roger Goodell or any company coming out and making this comment now. It's like you waited till public opinion shifted to then jump onto the right side. Like, this is completely useless information right now. You should have said it back then when people were trying to say that maybe no one wanted him to leave because he wasn't a good enough player. And you should have stepped up then and said, I want him, and made it clear who was standing in the way of you getting him. Like, this is, to me, just seems like trying to get in the news on the right side. Whether it's true or not, it doesn't matter. It's too late.
Mina, what is my shirt say again?
Black Thighs Matter.
Meat Shield, my new podcast. You can download it at OnlyFans. Just joking.
Oh, God.
Don't do that, because that's not real. Coming up,
dude,
we're going to talk about my favorite thing in the whole wide world. Bizball has been very, very good to me. It's the Morning Roast on ESPN Radio.
The Morning Roast. The Morning Roast.
Rest in peace, Rashay Caldwell. A lot of people know him from his NFL career, but don't know that he was in fact drafted by the Cincinnati Reds. You're listening to The Morning Roast on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. You can also ask for Smart Speaker to play ESPN Radio, and then you'll hear us. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and of course, all guests on the program appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Joining us right now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line is Jeff Passan, ESPN MLB Insider. And we have a couple things to get to. First of all, young media people, here's how you get your way onto a show. Before a program, text everybody on the show and congratulate them for what they're doing, and then present a piece of content and then say, hey, maybe we can do this on the show. It was brilliant. I saw it coming a mile away. I loved it, and it worked out. Jeffrey, how are you? Well done. Welcome to the Morning Roast.
I am shameless is how I am.
It was so great. I told the guys in Bristol, because they said, oh, congratulations on the reunion show. I was like, this is an angle. It's an angle. It's an angle, and then bang, there came the pitch. It was
Jeff,
well done.
Let me apologize for our arrogance. The idea that Jeff Passan, who is like only the best MLB reporter around and is on every show all week, all the time, and somehow needs to finagle his way onto the show by buttering up Clint Yates and Mina Kimes.
Was it me? We were all there.
Absurd. I think maybe it was genuine. Maybe Jeff just wanted to say congratulations.
All right, let's
the two things are not mutually exclusive. But here's the real crux of the matter. There is a universe within which we all exist that there are impersonations that happen on this show. I'm going to introduce them first, and then we are going to have a discussion. Hello, Elmo. How are you?
I'm doing great today. How are you, Clinton?
I'm well. Hello, Cookie Monster. How are you?
Well, I'm hungry, but ready to talk baseball.
Cookie Monster, meet Elmo. Please take it away.
No, no, you stop it. You stop it right now.
Shut up, Foxworth.
Elmo. You need to get it together, man. Jesus.
Elmo, why we get NBA and NHL but no baseball?
Cookie Monster, you sound very angry.
I said I was hungry.
You listen to The Morning Roast on ESPN Radio, ESPN app. I'm Clayton Yates. He's Dominic Foxworth. She's Mina Kimes. And on the Shelburne Zone Performance Line is MLB insider Jeff Passan. That was Cookie Monster and Elmo, which will never, ever return to the airways again. Except in podcast form, because it's fantastic.
I'm angry because it looks like we don't get baseball.
Here's the thing. If you're like the Seattle Mariners, you probably don't want baseball anyway.
Oh my god! We just had a diss in the impersonation universe. So can you update people as to what is actually happening?
Yeah, let's be clear. That is a phenomenal Elmo. It is fantastic. Cookie Monster?
That's a pretty bad Cookie Monster, though.
So, you know why it's a bad Cookie Monster? Because it's not Cookie Monster. That impersonation started with Mina Kimes trying to do a DMX impersonation, and then I said, you really just sound like Cookie Monster. And so then she was like, hey, it's Cookie Monster.
Old school roasters. Old school roasters would know that. But Jeffrey Passan, the real Jeffrey Passan, I do want to ask you this. Of all the guys that you've talked to, because I know all the baseball players that I've talked to, have basically been about, nah, season's not happening. I mean, like the attitude has been, for the most part, most guys don't think that they're going to play. It's either now or never, and now is not really happening. Just from the general attitude amongst guys actually in the league, what have you heard, Jeff?
You know, I think there are a couple different perspectives to take here. We have to understand the dynamics first. And the dynamics are this. There was an agreement in March between the players and the league that gives the league the unilateral ability to implement a schedule. Now, the league, which says it's going to be losing $640,000 per game, theoretically wants as short of a season as possible. The players, on the other hand, not only want a longer season, but they want to be paid their full pro rata salary. So you have these dynamics competing with one another. The issue is that, number one, a shorter season is not good for anybody. I'm sorry if the owners say that, you know, we're losing money, but over the long haul, if you have a 48-game season versus a 70 and 80-game season, the latter is far more representative. The second part, and maybe the more important part, is that the players have a hammer every bit as equal to the owner's ability to implement the schedule, and that is that they can say, we want expanded playoffs this year and next year. And that's something that the owners absolutely want because of the expanded television revenue that comes with it. So if there's a 48-game season, if there's a 50, 55-game season, if there's not a negotiated agreement, there is not going to be expanded playoffs. But if there is, we're going to see 14-team playoff this year, and I think that that is something that will be used this week as this thing probably finally comes to a conclusion.
Jeff. what is the realistic deadline for all? I know it depends on like how long the season will actually be, right? The longer it is, the sooner the players need to get in the field. But are you hearing like a sense of urgency as it pertains to this week? And if there's no deal this week, is it the nightmare scenario?
Yeah, I mean, the deadline was June 1st, but we're a week past that at this point. And I think that what we're doing is we're coming to a place where literally every single day is one fewer game played. And everybody understands that. I mean, look, it's going to take a minimum of 10 days to get everybody from the Dominican Republic, South Korea, all different corners of the country to their spring training 2.0 facilities. They have to travel. There's going to be 3 days worth of intake testing for coronavirus. There are a lot of very complicated elements to this. Once we get to that point, there's going to be another 3 weeks of the second version of spring training. And at that point, we're going to be, what, mid-July? I mean, they had such a golden opportunity to open the season on the 4th of July, which would have fulfilled every last bit of Americana that baseball still believes it has. And they blew that. So,
all right, Jeff, we got to go. We love you. But we got to go. We're up close against it, and we've got cookies to eat with Elmo. So thank you. By the way, missing baseball, tune in tonight for MLB Classic, Game 7 of the 2016 World Series between the Cubs and the Tribe. Coming up, senior white correspondent. It's the Morning Roast on ESPN Radio. Guess whose lives matter? Our lives matter on ESPN Radio.
Big time.
The Morning Roast.
In the first two iterations of this show, my notes were on a legal pad. Now, I've upgraded to graph paper. You're listening to The Morning Roast on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app, or by asking your smart speaker to play ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. But right now, Dominique Foxworth with your SportsCenter update.
Great jumper. What a jumper right there. Hello. Scott Dixon won IndyCar season opener with a dominant run at Texas on Saturday. The win was Scott's 47th career IndyCar win. Third most all-time behind A.J. Voigt and Mario Andretti. No spectators were allowed, which will also be the case for the next race on the road course at Indianapolis Motor Speedway on July 4th. Moments after the conclusion of Saturday's UFC 250 event, Conor McGregor announced his retirement. The 31-year-old tweeted, "It's been quite a ride," and explained his decision to Ariel Helwani later on Sunday morning. It's not the first time McGregor has announced his retirement via Twitter. He first walked away in March 2016. But return in August to defeat Nate Diaz. And that's your news. Back to you, Yates.
By the way, if you're missing baseball, you can tune in tonight for an MLB Classic. It's Game 7 of the 2016 World Series between the Cubs and the Tribe. It's presented by Progressive Insurance. Coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. You might recall the Dexter Fowler went yard in the first inning of that game. And then when they went to the White House, he showed up with a pair of custom J's for 44. And it was one of the tightest moments in baseball and political overlap history. That's a sidebar. Anyway. Joining us right now on the Shelpins Oil Performance Line is, of course, senior white correspondent Spencer Hall, who is now a free agent, which is a term that we like to use, but it doesn't mean he is any less valuable to this program. Spencer, we have to tell you something. Dominique Foxworth is participating in a march in his white neighborhood later this day. Where are the meetings and the committees on these marches when they ask black people to participate in them, and you're a white person doing that? How does that go?
I think that we meet on that at Panera first, or whatever sort of local bread company, right? We meet on those first, and then the subcommittee passes that on to a Starbucks, weirdly enough. You know, we're just like everybody else. America's just one big country, and when we need something done and we need important decisions made, we choose a free, anonymous corporate space.
Spencer, I love you, and I've missed you, and college football, you always, I learn a lot from you about college football, mostly about how ridiculous the history of many of these places are. How does this Florida State situation rank in the history of ridiculous situations where a coach is just blatantly lying? So the coach there appears that he just lied about talking to each of his individual players about about the social unrest. The players came out and said that he did not talk to them. He sent a mass text. And many of the players said that they were not going to play. Then they've come around now to being united. So where does this rank on your scale of college football ridiculosity?
It could have been much, 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 much worse because there have been player revolts before. Remember John Makovic at the University of Arizona was run out of town when players decided that they would rather not play and violate the terms of their scholarship agreements then play for that man. That's still the most powerful and ridiculous player revolt ever. I don't think it was ridiculous that they refused to play for him. I think whatever Makovic did leading to it was likely ridiculous. However, I would say this, and it's a valuable lesson for anyone watching this. I misspoke. I misspoke two powerful words, whether it's at work, whether it's in a relationship, maybe especially if it's in a relationship. Just say that and own it, because this got quashed pretty quick. Whether he misspoke or whether he blatantly lied, Norvell came out and got the thing under control, apparently, in a very short span of time. So it could have been a lot more ridiculous. But there's another story here, too. One movement in sports as a whole, and in particular in college football, has been to encourage leadership, has been to find captains, has been to form committees, and to encourage the passing on of a culture. That's a huge word in college coaching, right? Everybody says, well, we got to change the culture here, right? Part of that is encouraging player leadership. Well, you've been encouraging player leadership for the better part of 10 or 15 years, leaning hard on culture. One day they're going to lead in a way that might conflict with what you've said or what you want to happen, which is happening at multiple stops across college football right now.
Spencer, I got a football question, college football question. I'm going to get to that. But first, I want to go back to your beat as senior white correspondent. You told us about the meetings at Panera and Starbucks, about the marches. What's being discussed at the meetings as it pertains to these statements, like Instagram posts, you know, that usually begin, as a white person, I will never understand, ... I'm listening. Like, are you guys getting
form
letter?
Why do they always start with an identification of non-blackness, too?
How are these coming together? I just want to know, is there like a resource that's being passed around? Just give us some insight. On the ground insight.
So there was the big black square, right? Like Blackout Tuesday.
Yes.
And, you know, that got passed and then revoked pretty quickly. And that didn't work. And then, you know, Drew Brees tried to freestyle. Like, we tried to stop him. And he tried to freestyle, and then we had to pull that one back, too. So right now, there's a lot of listening. That's what I think is on the table, a lot of listening. I'm listening. A lot of as a white person, that's also very important. You got to come out and immediately identify that because, you know, how would we know other than scrolling to the next picture on your Instagram page?
1,000%, yeah.
I feel like I think the committee needs to look at some people not having to provide that. For instance, if Jim Nance were to enter a statement into the record on this and say, as a white man, no, we got you, Jim. We know.
A lot of redundant comments. The football stuff. This isn't just FSU, right? This is happening at programs across the country. What's happening in Iowa? What happened with Clemson? Iowa, I should actually explain what happened, which is all these players, former players, coming out, dropping stories about the strength coach.
Chris Doyle,
very strength coaching name, and some of the encounters they had. And then, of course, at Clemson, where we mentioned earlier, it's been sort of a long story, and it's an ongoing story. Coach Dabo Swinney in the past was critical of Kaepernick's protests. He's made comments kind of walking that back a little bit. Then players came forward and said assistant coach Danny Pierman used a racial slur during a practice 3 years ago. This is really been happening at programs across the country. And I want to ask you this. Is there anything unique you feel about the dynamic between coaches and players in college football versus NFL, NBA, NHL, what MLB, where it's, you know, they are unpaid laborers. They have to be recruited to be those unpaid laborers that leads you to believe this isn't going to stop happening. And in fact, there's actually a permanent shift of power taking place.
On the side of they have no power and are not empowered and cannot be empowered, labor not being paid obviously creates an enormous power differential between players and coaches. However, that means power is largely an intangible thing. And there's a lot of intangibles that might have far more influence at one point or another. The biggest one of those intangibles is the decision to attend a university, recruiting. And recruiting is the thing that caused Tommy Tuberville to discourage the use of the Confederate flag when he was the coach at Ole Miss, not principal. Recruiting will get a lot of people to get very woke very quickly about a lot of issues because you're going to be recruiting football players. A lot of those football players happen to be African American, and they are going to have a position on certain issues and on culture at the university. That's the case in Iowa. If you look at all of the allegations in Iowa, there are things that you find appalling. There are things that you find, the things you can understand how it would make a black player there feel really uncomfortable. It's things like that really give them an impetus to change, and not just in the theatrical sense, because I really don't care what the statement says, right? Players talk to players, especially highly recruited players who all attend the same camps together, and programs get a knock. They get a rep. Iowa had a rep being a place where you really couldn't be yourself or necessarily feel comfortable pointing that out as a black player. And now that's coming home to roost. So, yeah, they don't really have the same sort of bargaining power that professional leagues have. However,
I think they have a lot of power up front, and I think they have a lot of power on the back end if they are in a leadership position and if everyone is on the same page. That's what made Florida State work, is that everybody was on the same page, and the most prominent players managed to get a real quick flip out of the coach on that and apparently, you know, solve that problem. I keep saying apparently because I really don't know if you fix that kind of an issue in 24 hours, especially with a new coach.
You're listening to The Morning Roast on ESPN Radio. Clinton Yates, Mina Kimes, and Dominic Foxworth, who happens to be black. We're joined by Spencer Hall, free agent on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. I love the happens to be black thing, and I want to ask you about that, amongst other things, for your committee, mm-hmm. Spencer. It's always funny because there are times when it makes sense, because there are other times when it's like, well, they might not be there if they weren't black, so it doesn't just happens to be black, because that's kind of how the whole thing works. But that being said, did you have a meeting point in which you discussed your boy Dabo's TikTok game, which was insulting to me as a college football fan and as a black person in general? Speaking of all this culture change, I'm actually being serious on this. It's things like that that I think rub people the wrong way in terms of, like, what are y'all doing? Why are y'all seeming to take culture and not being able to respect the humans, especially when it comes to things like, I don't know, not letting kids wear hats or earrings in facilities? It's not just about what they say outside. Have you heard anything about what happens on the inside like that in terms of the specificity of the culture that could change, and including coaches not embarrassing themselves on behalf of their black players?
Yeah, and again, I'm going to go back to the one thing that one avenue you can always relate to a coach on, which is recruiting. That's it. I can't necessarily wait for you to be a moral or conscientious person. However, I do know that if it affects your recruiting and I talk to you about that, we might be able to bend you that way. If Dabo on TikTok, which if you haven't seen Dabo on TikTok, appropriation might be a strong word there, right? And it might be a form of appropriation culturally that you would notice a bit more in terms of what Dabo is doing, because he doesn't necessarily extend the courtesy of cultural appropriation to recognition of certain lack of rights or privileges afforded or taken from some people in our society. That's a long way of me saying this, that you don't get to just take one slice of the pie, right? You have to take the whole thing. And if Dabo is doing that, I think it's indicative of, and it's not a unique criticism of Dabo here, but Dabo has a very singular and very narrow view generally of everything, endlessly positive, right? To the point of going, well, why would I talk about anything negative? I'm trying to stay positive today. There's a lot of people like that, a lot, especially right now, if you talk about everything going on in the country and everything happening in sports, you know, where a criticism is taken to be an insult, and as opposed to, or ruining the vibe. And I think that's very much what you're talking about with Dabo, that Dabo would always understand a recruit-based pitch. He's not necessarily going to understand that something is occurring in this country, because I really don't think his radar goes out that far. I don't. I think it's a very narrow focus, and I think that's painfully apparent right now. Like, Dabo really is the kind of person who, if Dabo was your dad and your wedding got canceled and it was in some place like Mallorca, guess what? He's still going to Spain. Sorry, y'all. Beach life. I already paid for these tickets, y'all. You know what? You can't let a bad time. You can't just let one bad thing ruin your life. It could have happened 3 hours earlier. I guarantee you he's that dude, right?
Good point. Spencer Hall, he's the senior white correspondent for The Morning Roast. You know he was making an appearance. Hire him, somebody. I'm talking to you. Thank you, Spencer, for joining us.
Hey, thanks for the free advertising.
Always. By the way, ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Small business protection for more than vehicles, y'all. With insurance expertise to keep your company moving forward, more at progressivecommercial.com. Coming up, we're going to talk about the NFL. What a great league in America. It's The Morning Roast on ESPN Radio.
Quad Bucks!
Earlier today on The Morning Roast.
Hello, Elmo. How are you?
I'm doing great today. How are you, Clinton?
I'm well. Hello, Cookie Monster. How are you?
Oh, I'm hungry.
Cookie Monster, meet Elmo. Please take it away.
No, you stop it.
Oh, my goodness, a steady together, man. Jesus.
That is a phenomenal Elmo. It is fantastic.
That's a pretty bad Cookie Monster, though.
So, you know why it's a bad Cookie Monster? Because it's not Cookie Monster. That impersonation started with Mina Kimes trying to do a DMX impersonation, and then I said, you really just sound like Cookie Monster. And so then she was like, hey, it's Cookie Monster.
Now back to The Morning Roast with Mina Kimes, Dominique Foxworth, and Clinton Yates.
Did you hear that?
I heard it.
Who was first?
Yep, top billing.
Today is the birthday of my favorite basketball player of all time. Y'all call him Allen Iverson. I'll call him Bubba Chuck. You're listening to The Morning Roast on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. You heard the voices of one Dominic Foxworth and, of course, Mina Kimes. Right now, though, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Y'all quad box it up. You got football shows. You talk about your little football on your little football podcast, and you wear your little football clothes, and you hang out with your little football friends. But guess what? We ain't got no football right now, but we kind of got it coming, which means we got to pontificate on what the league is actually going to look like. Now, I personally believe that the NFL is going to be a drastically lessened product as a result of a lack of crowd. And I don't mean that in terms of anything that they can sort of be responsible for. I just mean that if you think about any sport and what it's going to look like, the NFL is going to be the most different with nobody in the crowd. Now, that being said, what do you think it's going to be in terms of all of this stuff now that we got Raj hashtag and BLM in terms of everything? Dominique.
So I, first to your first point, I love your position on football generally. It just makes me happy. It just brings joy to my heart. It makes me happy. Yeah. I football's do understand a necessary and agree. Evil. There's like, it's like the crowd noise. I don't know about not being able to see the fans, but the crowd noise is like a movie score. And I do think that, like, the quiet anticipation when the ball is in the air, like, all that stuff is real. The roar of the crowd, the booze, like, it does add to the entertainment value. But I think with a little bit of creativity, they can get around that pretty easily. But as for on the field, I'm looking forward to the season. Like, I'm pretty excited about this season. There's some players that I'm excited to see prevail and play well and get better. And so I just
prevail.
I'm looking for yeah, like it's my Dak
that
Prescott.
Sounds like we're
going to
come to the race war. Prevail.
That was crazy.
I'm just really excited about my guy Dak Prescott because everyone keeps turning on him. I told y'all 2 years ago he was great, and he's getting there. Anyway, Mina, what do you think about football? You like it?
You know what I did yesterday from 3 to 5:30 p.m. Well, first I studied the Falcons to prep for my division preview. You can check it out on the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny Drops Tuesday. But after that, I've been studying goal line fades for a project I'm working on. You know,
God.
I hate them. And I watched every Calvin Johnson touchdown, I think of his last three seasons or something. I would watch football. Well, first of all, they're tremendous, right? What a blessing that man was. But that's neither here nor there. Also, he's probably the only person who should do a goal line fade. But I would watch football with no noise. No broadcast. I do it all the time. I do it every weekend. It's called All 22. And I don't think America is that far from me on this. Now, I also think by September, the NFL has been so fortunate, right, because of timing and all of this. You know, we've been talking about how baseball, like they're still at loggerheads and they can't come together. And I don't think we spend enough time acknowledging how baseball was uniquely screwed by all of this. Because we're like, oh, wow, the NBA and NHL, man, they got it together. They already played their seasons. All they had to agree on was the playoffs. Baseball has to agree on an entire season, which makes it more difficult. But the NFL's been lucky because of the timing. And I think from a broadcast angle, they have all the time in the world to watch what every other league does. Bundesliga, oh, wow, it sounds weird without crowd noise. Sprinkling a little bit. Oh, you need to amp it up when it's like in the red zone? Okay, we're going to do that. They're going to figure it out, I think, when it comes to the viewing experience from a sound perspective. It's not that hard to address. Now, from a safety perspective, that's a whole other thing.
You're listening to The Morning Roast on ESPN Radio. Clinton Yates, Mina Kimes, Dominic Foxworth. But the reason I brought that up, Fox, is because I remember you once told us you never really missed the game until like that one time you went to a Super Bowl, and all of a sudden the crowd started getting riled up and the fireworks came, where you were like, dang, I want to play. And that's what I'm saying. I'm not just talking about this from a viewer standpoint. Like, motivation to play football is going to change when the only dudes out there are the dudes you've been looking at all week.
I think you're right that it's going to change. I mean, I don't know. I can't speak for motivation stuff for the guys necessarily, but I do remember, like, all that stuff about the pomp and circumstance is exciting and enjoyable. But I think more than anybody, I remember this during negotiations we were talking about this with the owners. They were talking about how much the crowd increases because so much money was coming from TV and so little was coming from the in-stadium gate, but they were adamant about how much the crowd enhances the at-home product. And I think that's right. You don't think about it until you listen to, and Mina's, I don't think you're right. America's very different from you, Mina, in that America's not watching all 22s. And I guarantee you, if you put all 22s on TV, the ratings would plunge. It's not something that America wants. They don't want silent all 22 footage.
I've been seeing what they do with the soccer, though, and the noise. I think they're going to get close to it. But Dominique, what was your favorite NFL viewing experience of the last 5 years? Were you at a game? Was it loud?
Yeah, it was probably at a game, and it was loud. Yes, sorry, Mina.
I thought you were going to say watching the Seahawks Rams game.
I forgot about that. Wow. You're right. Wow. Never mind.
I was trying to tee you up. To make this broader.
We got
to
reset practice. Rerun the play. Re-rack it. People are genuinely upset that we didn't get that lob down. You know what I'm saying?
My favorite experience was when Mina was acting like a crazy person and cursing and acting ridiculous because her Seahawks are playing. Sorry.
Yeah, but the point is that that's what people like about football. It's not about necessarily, what we're seeing on the TV from the sound point of view.
I don't know that I can agree with that, Mina. I mean, if Tony Romo is making actual quarterback dollars in order to get paid to broadcast television and he's the one getting fired up by the crowd, too, in the broadcast, it has to count for something.
I think there's different types of fans, though. Like, Mina's enjoyment in the game, a lot of it comes from her, like, actually caring what happens in the game. I think a lot of people are just casual fans and want to watch a fun entertainment product. Not everyone is there trying to break down what's happening. So while we do it for our job and we sometimes enjoy it, not everybody's like that. I think it's going to matter to a lot of people unless they don't figure it out.
Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Coming up. Y'all think we haven't been talking about these issues for a while? Y'all think that this network is suddenly having to switch gears in order to cover what's going on in Black America? You might want to check out a little website called The Undefeated. It's the Morning Roast on ESPN Radio. I work there. So does Fox. We'll talk to you soon.
That was a bad segment.